This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host for the Global Product Management Talk. I'm delighted to be your host for the Global Product Management Talk. We've been on hiatus for a couple of weeks, and I'm delighted to be back today on August 5th, back in the Studio 132 with BZ Lewis, my engineer. Thanks to Blame Sally for the music intro. The Global Product Management Talk is a discussion of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about products, business process, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and excellence. We're a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can follow us at PRODMGMTTALK on Twitter. If you are tweeting, use the hashtag pound PRODMGMTTALK. We're at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. And if you would like to call in and speak with us live, the number is 323-927-2957. My guest today is Tatiana Mowry, who will be talking about her book as well as her experience as a woman in product. And she is launching our month-long Women in Product series for the next couple of episodes. We will be talking with women in product, which is very exciting, in recognition of the Women in Product Meetup in New York City that has joined the startup product movement. So, let's see. What else do I want to tell you? There is an archive of past episodes, over 100 past episodes, at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. You can also find us on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on all mobile devices. Just search for PRODMGMTTALK. We're brought to you today by the AIPMM, that is the Association of International Product Management and Marketing, which provides conferences, a career center, peer forums, tools, templates, publications, and eligibility to enroll in certification programs to become an Agile Certified Product Manager, Certified Product Manager, Certified Product Marketing Manager, Certified Brand Manager, and Certified Innovation Leader, that allow individual members to demonstrate their level of expertise and provide corporate members an assurance that their product professionals are operating at peak performance. Go to www.aipmm.com, follow them on Twitter at AIPMM, and check out their Friday webinar series that I used to host of excellent experts and authorities talking about all issues of product management. Also, the AIPMM is forwarding product management with the soon-to-be-launched ProdBoc, the Product Management Body of Knowledge. It is a document put together by over 60 consultants and experts in the field, discussing the seven phases of the product management lifecycle. And continued listening care. I will make that available to you when it is available. We're also brought to you by the Startup Product Summit, which is a community-driven conference in San Francisco for everyone passionate about product excellence. Creating products is a group effort of designers, developers, marketers, everyone at a startup. And we're inviting people, regardless of title, industry, or stage of growth, to come together to share, learn, and talk about what it really takes to produce products that people love. Check it out at startupproduct.com. Follow on Twitter at startupproduct. The speakers are just phenomenal who are speaking. They are product leaders who, at various points in their product career, who will be talking about what they've learned from the past and sharing their experience so we can invent the future. Go to startupproduct.com and register today for the best price, or join the Startup Product Movement to get discounts. Go to sfproducttalks.com. That's the meetup in San Francisco. There's also the Startup Product Boston meetup and Women in Product New York City. If you search for those on Meetup, you will get discounts to join. Thanks to our broadcast sponsor at Sprintly, sprint.ly. Don't ask how it's going. Watch how it's going with Sprintly at sprint.ly. It's project management software that brings in the entire corporation to the software development process by showing managers and non-engineers a top-level view of what the programmers are doing. Check them out at sprint.ly and follow the CEO at Joe Stump. He writes excellent things about not only about the development and in the product Sprintly, about but an excellent perspective on managing products and product development. Thank you, BrainMates.com, boosting people and product performance. Subscribe to the newsletter, read popular brain rants, learn about their consulting and mentoring approach to forward your product management career and methods at BrainMates and BrainMates.com. They're in Australia. An Australian product management consulting and training organization led, co-founded by a woman in product, Adrian Tan, who also helped me start the product Global Product Management Talk Twitter chat. Thank you, Sponsumo. Solves the headaches of managing conference and other events and allows you to focus on relationships and sales. Sign up for a trial account at sponsumo.com. That's sponsumo.com. If you would like to reach our listeners, our audience is over 30,000 listens per episode and growing. And if you would like to be a sponsor and reach product professionals in San Francisco at Startup Product Summit, just shoot an email to info@startupproduct.com. Ask about sponsorships for both the Global Product Management Talk and Startup Product Summit, as well as the Product Camp San Francisco, which is coming up October 12th. It's a day after the Startup Product Summit taking place in San Francisco. We'll talk more about that. And speaking about product camps, which are an unconference, user-driven day of presentations and passionate product people getting together to share, learn, and network. On July 20th, there were three product camps going on worldwide. One was in Melbourne, Australia. One was in Toronto, Canada. And one was the 11th product camp in Austin. If you want to see what took place there, what content came out of there, who is participating, go to storify.com/ProdMGMTTALK. At the Global Product Management Talk, we maintain a map of product camps worldwide. This is a growing phenomenon, very exciting, and we archive and capture the content through tweets and publicly shared information from all of the product camps, as well as local product events and digital product events. So stay up with what's happening in this emerging profession by following stirify.com/ProdMGMTTALK. By the way, I am Cindy F. Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon. Would love to link up to you directly on LinkedIn and happy to answer questions you might have about getting into product management, about managing your products, about the full 7-phase life cycle of the product management process, and about forwarding your career in product and product excellence. So you can link up to me, send me email using cfsolomon@gmail.com. That's all O's. Okay, so today we are talking with Tatiana Mowry on the power of digital storytelling. So Tatiana, I'm very, very excited to talk with her, and also want to give a shout out to my colleague and team member, Melissa, who introduced me to Tatiana, and I By the way, I'd like to get Melissa on the show as well. It's very exciting to work with passionate product people. It's just amazing people's backgrounds and what they bring to this. So Tatiana Mulry is a founder. She's an author, a patent holder. She's an award-winning app developer. And she, okay, so let's see. I have so much to tell you about her. She's worked in product development and marketing for over 15 years, helping companies like MasterCard, AT&T, JCPenney, and dozens more master the mobile space. Now her goal is to harness the support of hundreds of top brands to support schools and charities across the U.S. through the award-winning social shopping fundraising platform, edrover.com. And so she's prepared to talk with us about the pain of the pivot, surprising lessons learned from customer feedback, bootstrapping your way to product success, unusual ways to promote your product. But I also want to talk about her first book, which she recently published, which is called The Cause, The Power of Digital Storytelling for Social Good. And by the way, if you are tweeting, I'll go out to Twitter and give a shout out to you. Tatiana has graciously offered to give top tweeters a digital access to her book, The Cause. And you can follow her at The Cause Book and at Mrs. Mulry on Twitter. So let's see. So let me tell you about the book. Based on years of experience working with dozens of large Fortune 500 companies, she lays out a comprehensive step-by-step plan for nonprofit leaders, social entrepreneurs, marketing managers, and cause advocates to help them find their voice and express their passion for their organization to create bigger and better results. So it's called The Cause Book, The Power of Digital Storytelling for Social Good. And also she's the founder of DDX Media, which is not your typical mobile marketing agency, because they prefer to work with skin in the game, sharing the rewards of success with their clients and partners. You can find them at ddx-media.com. Okay, let's see. What else have I left out? Oh, you're welcome to call in, and people tell me that if you're listening live, the best experience is to call into 323-927-2957. Okay, Tatiana.
That was quite an intro, Cindy.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I love being a passionate product person. That's a triple P.
That might be
a new handle for us.
Yes, for sure.
That's wonderful.
So is there
Yes.
Go ahead. I'm going to go out to Twitter, and why don't you fill in anything that I left out?
Sure. No problem. I thought I would tell you a little bit about my product journey just to kick things off. Originally, I was a product development person at MasterCard, and I was passionate about that as well. We were doing some amazing things, looking at transaction data and how can we use that to enhance the profitability of our member banks, add ease to consumers. So we were looking at things like budget management tools. I was very active in the mobile payments arena and how we were going to be using mobile wallets on the phone. Now, granted, this was 10 years ago, so we've been at this a long time, and the industry has not made as much progress as we'd like with the NFC model that I was working on at the time, but clearly there are a lot of people paying for things on their mobile devices, from content stores like the App Store to obviously music is very popular, and who doesn't pop onto Amazon.com and use their store credentials to buy things when they need it from their mobile phone as well. So mobile payments is alive and well, but that's the type of thing that I started, where I cut my product teeth, I would say. Then over time, I decided to leave MasterCard to come out to California and do the VC-funded startup route as the head of product development for an internet and mobile startup that unfortunately did not live very long. So that was a very interesting time in my life because I really got to sharpen my product skills. When you work at a huge company, you have 50 people doing things for you at any one time. When you work at a tiny internet startup, you are the 50 people. You are doing all those jobs. And that was really an interesting trial by fire. Just getting very close to the development team, the designers, getting immediate feedback and trying to pivot every 2 months whether we needed it or not. So it was really, really interesting. And now I've been working on my own, actually, with my own startup, and there are so many lessons that I've learned along the way. So I've gone from working in product for a huge, huge company to, a VC-funded company with a little bit more, I would say, a shorter runway, but some funding, to my own bootstrapped fund, startup, which is quite the different experience. And so I feel like what I can offer today is a mix of perspectives from those three very different spheres of product vantage points.
Awesome.
And, go ahead.
It's interesting because it was, it's over 10 years now. I was also in a mobile startup. So I appreciate your saying that. A lot of the research that we did is still applicable. How it's like we were too soon. The technology was available, but it was too early.
Right.
Broadband wasn't available, and that changed everything. We were solving a lot of problems, having to deal with working around broadband not being available. But the form, the interaction, all of those things, we were looking into the future that has finally arrived, and I agree, it took longer than we expected. And I wonder if that has to do with being in the bubble of Silicon Valley, which I have left for 6 weeks and just recently returned.
You have a new perspective as well, don't you?
Yes, totally.
So I at MasterCard, I was in the New York global headquarters, and the difference with a big company like that is they have deep R&D pockets. Of course, it's never enough. It never seems like enough when you get your budgets handed down to you, but you know the company is going to be there in 10 years, and they are not in a rush to innovate, I would say. And it's a different set of urgency. It's more about pushing your ideas up through management and being an evangelist for your ideas and lobbying to get the budget to pursue the ideas than it is really to struggle with anything else. And at a smaller company, when you're not fitting the bill, I think the urgency is just to meet the board's requests, the board's demands, and focus on the metrics, focus on acquiring new users and tweaking things to accelerate that process, and finding new partnerships and promotional partners was a really big focus at that smaller but VC-funded startup. But when you shift to your own startup and as a founder, there's just a profound shift. I think the things that are really important at the in the larger companies, like telling your story, evangelizing, it's even more urgent and personal because this is your idea. This is, you may be developing it with a core team of people who are really passionate about it, but it's up to you to tell that story to anyone who will listen. It's up to you to go out and find customers, find partners, find investors, and it's absolutely, every word that comes out of your mouth has to be on point, on story. You can't afford to not be focused and clear about what you're trying to say. And that's really why I wrote this book, because, I am focused in the nonprofit sector. We really do want to have our our product at Rover, helping schools and charities. And I, as I started to interview these customers, these potential customers, I realized how many of them were really struggling with getting the word out, mobilizing volunteers, soliciting donations, and it was because they don't like tooting their own horn. They don't realize that people need to have the rich stories and the personal impact described to them in order to get on board with the vision. And I think there's a lesson there for any entrepreneur, but in particular, I feel the nonprofit sector, we are a little bit more humble, a little bit more focused on the mission. We really want to be organizing the day-to-day and getting the activities done, and we don't like going out and being that evangelist and standing on a stump, whether it be at an event or the gala or online, you know, being able to manage our own Twitter accounts or Facebook pages. We just don't like having to tell that story. And so much support and practical expertise, I think, can be shared in that sector that would really help elevate the visibility and the awareness of these amazing things that cause leaders do.
So can you, I'm sorry, so we're getting retweeted by Andre in Austin. Hi, Andre.
Oh, wonderful.
So can continue on that vein, because the ability to tell a story, it's incredibly urgent, and I find that I'm wanting to listen to people. Because,
okay, sure. I absolutely. I mean, I can keep going, and you can jump right in if you need to.
But even as being the founder and forwarding the events that I'm producing and this movement that's become a grassroots effort, I'm always listening to target what the message is and also to refine what the message is. But I do find that even as a product manager, it's all about educating and targeting that message. You say it's very important that every word almost has to be a call to action, but every word also has to be customized to who the audience is.
Right. Well, I mean, it's at all levels of your communication, people are wondering why you're doing what you're doing. And if you don't have a good way of telling them that, if you haven't scripted or defined or really internalized your big why, then it's always going to sound wishy-washy when you tell them what you're doing. But for example, we're recruiting people to join our tech team because we have some really ambitious goals and we need to make sure that we're going to be able to accomplish them. We've got some tight timing. And, you know, I've been talking to a lot of developers lately. And the thing is that, you know, if you have a tight story, if you're talking with your passion about what you're trying to accomplish, if they get it, their eyes are lighting up and they're on board. You need to personally enroll people to your team, and then you also need to be able to do that as you're acquiring customers, as you're getting partners. I mean, they need to be personally connected to what you're trying to achieve, and it has to fill a need that they have as well to have a deeper impact, at least in the cause world. I mean, perhaps we have it easier because our startup aims to have a social impact, and people are really starving for that right now. I think people in the workforce are looking to have a deeper meaning to their work, and it's refreshing when they get to talk to an entrepreneur who's really trying to make that happen. And that's happening more and more. I think there's a huge social entrepreneur movement as well, which is, it's cool that we're getting some exposure from you, Cindy. This is great. But from that recruiting conversation to knowing that that person is on board with the mission, it just makes it so much easier to actually work with them and remind them and get them excited about new releases and get them, you know, to be motivated to move forward to accomplish the vision. So, you know, if you don't have that, if you can't explain that, then nobody's going to be interested. Everybody's going to be like, yeah, well, I could work for this way more stable company over here, or I could continue to do freelance over here, which will ultimately probably make me more money. It might not satisfy me, but if you can tell a compelling story about how the work that is going to be done in this position is going to make a huge impact, and that hooks somebody in their heart, then that is, you're going to have a way better team, way better results, and a much more committed a group effort to achieve that vision. So it really is a lot of self-work and mindset work at the beginning to figure out what is it about this particular mission that I need to share with somebody. Why am I personally connected to this cause or this issue? And what am I trying to achieve? And then how can I welcome that person and provide them that? It's almost like a hospitality routine to say, look, this, you belong in this, in this effort with me. You know, if this connects to you, I want you to be on this team. And I'll help you get on this team, and, you know, we'll be able to work together. The same goes for signing up partners. You know, we talk a lot with different elements of the school, maybe PTA leaders, PTO leaders. We talk to principals, education foundation directors, and also we're increasingly talking to other charity, other nonprofit leaders. And it's great to get that feedback. I mean, of course, they're committed to their own vision, and they have a unique problem. Most of them are severely underfunded, and they don't like asking people for money. But they know they have to, so they get into this rut of, yeah, can you just sell, you know, one more set of popcorn, or can you just buy these spirit shirts, or can you, you know, we need to do our wrapping paper fundraiser, but it's not passionate at all. It's just we're going through the motions, and every year we do this, and we need to do this for our own survival. And they think that, especially new people, just understand why they're asking, where the money is going, and how they can be, and what benefit there's going to be to the people they're asking to fundraise. But most people don't really realize. The organizations have been doing the same old fundraisers so long, they forget that they have to tell people, hey, this is going to give us the funds to create a new playground so that our kids can actually be engaged physically, where, you know, we've had gym cut and physical education is severely on the decline. So we need this for health and fitness for our kids. Okay, great. That's the benefit. Let's talk about a campaign around that instead of just saying, hey, just, you know, could you sell one more tchotchke to your grandma so that we can, we can survive. I mean, it's just not as practical and inspirational as if you can tie it to a specific outcome that everyone can get excited about. And it's hard, I think, for nonprofit leaders to understand that they need to go through that extra effort, that extra bit of soul searching, and actually open their hearts to their followers to get them to understand what they need to do, and to understand how much their contributions are appreciated. Oftentimes, a few core people at a nonprofit do all of the work, and those people get burnt out. But there's, you know, another 10 or 20 people who come to every meeting and are very quiet and have never been asked to do anything. And so what I'm trying to accomplish with this book is to help nonprofit leaders to have that conversation with the next tier of potential leaders and draw their personal stories out and get them to be evangelizing the cause that they're supporting. The more that they can talk about it and internalize their support for it, the more that's also going to come out in financial support as well as volunteer support. So it just helps you grow your circle.
So you're talking about how to increase engagement with the mm-hmm. with the intention of the cause, which Mm-hmm. Which in the B2B world, the cause is the product.
Right,
I think
exactly. I mean, I think you can apply this exactly the same way. It's funny that you mentioned that. I mean, in our case, our product is cause-related, but I agree, you could absolutely substitute the word the product. You know, and if somebody is really passionate about the product and they can tell the story of the product and they can say how the product has benefited them, then you have somebody that could hop on Twitter and really promote it, or you have somebody who is going to pass it along to their friend via email. And if you don't have a product that people are passionate about to that degree, you really have to work on sparking that passion, because it's basically a very inexpensive way of growing your base, right? That viral traffic is what we're all after, but it's very elusive. Nobody can figure out what the formula is, but my instinct is that it's really about being able to tell that passionate story and being able to really solve a problem for somebody.
Right. So that the story that you're telling is not is authentic, and mm-hmm. and it's connected to people. Even
yes.
if it is a product, even if it is a cause. I mean, why do these causes and products exist? Ultimately, it's to better and to contribute, and
right.
I think that's a key human need, regardless of where you are on Maslow's misinterpreted pyramid. It's a human need, at least
yeah.
amongst professionals. Are certainly amongst people coming to San Francisco to have what they're doing make a difference, and to have mm-hmm. their efforts contribute to betterment of someone
yeah.
or something. And that's really, you know, where this grassroots movement startup product is really crystallizing around that. Let's create people who know how to build products and know how to ask the right questions, so we're building products that make a difference and don't exploit now and in the future.
Well, I agree that connection is a basic human need, and that we have to somehow simulate that with our products. You know, being in technology, it can seem kind of impersonal, but I think the better products actually speak to you as the user, as a human being with needs, and have some humor to them, you know, maybe a little bit of tongue-in-cheek sometimes. It makes you pay attention. In the olden days when I was a banker, and now I can gladly say a reformed banker, we had to speak in a very very formal tone, you know, very, I don't know, very like sort of buttoned up, I would say. Just like you're in your blue suit all the time, right? You just have to be extremely formal. But I think as we decide to run our own startups, we need to infuse our own personality, or at least a brand personality, into what we're doing and how we're talking and how we engage with people. And those are the products that actually people love. And I guess the one that comes to mind is MailChimp. You know, I know that there are email tools out there with more functionality, but I love that little chimp says something funny to me every time I log in and sends me off to a funny video, or is telling me I look good today, or it's time for a banana break. It's just silliness, but it speaks to me that they care that I'm enjoying using their tool. And so, you know, you stick with it. Those are the kinds of things I think that help with attracting consumers, but also keeping those users engaged.
Excellent. Yes. I love MailChimp. And it is a total shift to your point. And also the difference between old school corporate tone of voice, and still you see it in big enterprise B2B companies and software companies versus startups,
yeah.
versus, you know, new companies and web-based products.
Right. And, you know, we can't be afraid, I think, to infuse some personality and to get noticed that way. And we also can't forget to appreciate people. to appreciate customers, to appreciate our partners, to be able to say thank you at the right times for them sharing our products or signing up. I mean, it should be a little celebration in some way. And really, you know, have those moments be something special. So pay extra attention to those moments of inflection when somebody is starting to use your product. Maybe they have their first transaction, or they get comfortable enough that they're inviting their friends. Those are moments to really savor and celebrate. same goes true, I guess, for your employees. You know, have those moments of real celebration, those milestones when you hit a certain user count or when your revenue hits a certain amount. Man, they're all part of that. And especially if you've attracted them with your incredible, passionate story about how this startup is going to change the world, well, appreciate them when you do have those moments, those milestone moments, when you are proving that you can change the world. So, I mean, it contributes to a culture that you cultivate on the inside of your startup, but also that shines through to the outside of your startup. And those kinds of companies are just more magnetic and attract people, the right people, to come and be a part of that community.
Excellent. So Evan Hamilton and the company User Voice, he actually is tweeting, and he's exemplifying what you're talking about, just in parallel, because that's their whole tone of voice, is being personal and interacting directly with people. And his tweet was, "I will never be mad at you for sending me a second email about something, because reminders are good."
Yeah, no, that's true. And we shouldn't apologize for every communication. But we have to make sure that every email we send is additive to the relationship, right? It's giving you something, some little nugget, some little piece of joy, or some little instruction that's going to help you be more successful with the product. So another, if I can go a little bit deeper into the story piece itself, one of the things we always talk about is outlining your story of woe to win. So what was that initial problem that you were trying to solve, and why was that personal to you? In my case with Ed Rover, we wanted to make fundraising way easier and more natural and organic, and make, you know, parents be able to raise money just doing the things that they already love and enjoy, like shopping online, but make that relevant and sort of contribute to their favorite school or charity throughout the year. And so I'm always telling people about how, as a mother of three kids, you know, I would get 12 flyers coming home to me from school, scouts, church, and sports, and everybody asking, you know, in the same month for us to contribute and write checks or buy junk that we don't need. And I mean, if you saw me in person, Cindy, you would know I don't need any more pizza. I don't need any more cookie dough. I don't need to be standing outside of Chili's while 1,000 of my closest friends are trying to get in on a Tuesday night for 10% back to the school. I don't need all that stuff. But what I do need, I'm happy to buy in such a way that would contribute to my kids' education, because that's the cause that's most personal to me. I mean, I think there's wonderful work being done around the world, but most parents just are very focused on their children's achievement, and especially in the last few years with budget cuts being so severe, it's been a good message to people, and so they get it. They are like, yes, I'm asked all the time for all these dumb fundraisers. I'm with you, my sister. I'm like, I'm on your train, you know. Let's fix this. And so then when I can tell them about the solution I've developed, which they can go on to edrover.com and they can pick their school and they can get, you know, they can basically buy, search or browse from thousands of items, and anything they buy, they get a percentage back to their school. They're like, this is so awesome, and it's only going to get more awesome. Let me give you more tips. And I love having that conversation and getting feedback one-on-one. I think especially when you have low budget situation, like bootstrapping situation, or you've got a lot of pressure from VCs to get your product to the next level, you tend to squash the the necessary consumer research and say, no, I understand my consumer because I am my consumer and I don't need to ask them anything. And that is a huge, huge, huge mistake. And I think that I've learned some really surprising lessons because I remember feeling that way at the beginning when I first launched the original EdRover app 2 years ago. Some of the things that really surprised me in getting user feedback were that people wanted to be reminded where they could use our product, and they wanted to get push notifications in every location where they could use our product. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked because I grew up, cut my product teeth in banking community, and privacy was the number one word, and everybody was always like, no, we can't over-notify people. It would absolutely turn them off. They would cancel the product, and we would get in so much trouble. But parents are coming up to me going, I keep forgetting that I could use this at Walmart or at Starbucks. And they wanted to be reminded. And so in our new product, which actually we're in beta right now, and I love your feedback, but in our new product, we have a plan to have those kinds of push notifications be configurable. So if you're a huge fan of Starbucks, and you can get Starbucks gift cards in our future release of our product, and you want to be reminded whenever you're near a Starbucks, we're going to let you do that. Because we know that some parents are really excited about that, and they don't want to forget an opportunity to support their kids. But that was a huge, huge, huge surprise to me because I would have been way too risk averse knowing what I already sort of what I felt like was the norm around that, the sort of the industry practices that I had heard about. And, experienced in all of my dealings with legal and everything at a big company, but that's not what parents on the ground really wanted.
And I see that as a shift as well across mm-hmm. the board, that people don't mind, they want to be reminded of events and mm-hmm. and across platforms. And so they're not annoyed if it's something they're interested in because it's actually a service. If we're reminding them, then they don't have to remember. And I'm always and following up with speakers and I'm always promoting an event weekly.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way. Personally, I wouldn't be picking up the phone and calling someone that many times, but but an email is something different. People are so overrun with emails or a push notification from mobile. When I was on the road over the past 6 weeks, driving over 8,000 miles, I really appreciated the push notifications I got from my apps. It was very helpful telling me, hey, this where you are now, there's this attraction or there's this hotel or this discount. That was very helpful. I didn't have to go looking for them because I didn't have time.
Well, it's great. I mean, the thing is that we have really smart devices now, and they can tell us so many interesting and cool things, and people will find certain things useful. But, of course, you want to give them the tools to turn it off, too, because there's always one guy who's going to be like, this is way too many things. How do I delete my account? How do I do this? And, he's taken to Twitter to share his ire. So, you need to give people the control as well, but they definitely appreciate that. Now, another mistake I see startups doing all the time with their messaging is they go dark on email for a little while, and then all of a sudden they come back and they just say, okay, click here to renew your account or to do this or to upgrade or to do, and you're like, who is this again? What is this relating to? They forget to remind people who they are and what the value is of doing the action they're trying to get them to do. Now, if you are out of my life for 3 months, 6 months, I've forgotten what you do. Maybe it's my 40-year-old brain. Your cryptic little brand is not explaining that to me. You have to give me an intro like, hey, you signed up for
contact.
This a while ago. It does, it does X, Y, and Z. This is why you love it. By the way, now you can upgrade and do this. You've got to set the context for people because they don't remember. Even if they thought it was the coolest thing ever 6 months ago, they don't know who you are now. So you always have to be reminding them and reinforcing your brand value.
Excellent.
Yeah,
and,
you're right.
And providing
the context is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something I find with engineers all the time is they start at the third paragraph as if you were there for the introductory and the setting the context paragraph. They just are continuing their train of thought or they're deep. And that's what I see that the value of product managers do also is facilitate that context and put in those bridges to get into that deep conversation and step backwards to include a bigger conversation and make it more available. That's certainly what we're doing with the Global Product Management Talk.
Yeah, and every email that you send out should be in a state where you could encourage the user to forward it to someone else and start the story from scratch. That's a good rule of thumb. You know, you don't want to be repetitive, but you have to give them enough context that if they shared that with someone else, they would know what the heck is going on.
Right, right. So you're providing them with the ability to retell the story.
Right. And also, I mean, it never hurts. Ask them to reply to you or ask them to share their testimonial. Oftentimes we forget to ask that favor as well, but that usually leads to even new words that you can use to tell your story. So, for example, we had an article written about us way back when, and they were saying that Ed Rover is going to be the new bake sale. And I just thought that was so clever. It's like, okay, well, how do you ground the story in something that everybody already knows is a popular fundraiser and give it that twist that we're, you know, the better bake sale? And so sometimes we'll now weave in those messages that are kind of paraphrased from some of the customer feedback we've gotten into the way that we promote the product today. So Every little piece of feedback is very useful. Another thing that's so, so useful is not just the written feedback. Get out into the field and talk to your users one-on-one or in group settings. And one way that we did this on a budget this summer was actually, I felt pretty clever. We invited people through Facebook and, you know, people we knew of and invited groups to invite their people. We held a multi-school fundraiser where people would come in and buy tickets for their kids to do trampoline jumping for 2 hours. And they got some, you know, a pasta dinner. And we took them, the parents, in a room and showed them Ed Rover up on a screen and got their feedback on what features were going to be most important for them, what kind of products they were looking to purchase for fundraisers, what, you know, would they be willing to share this with somebody, how did they feel about what we were showing them. We got so much good feedback, and they paid for the party, and they were happy to do it. So it doesn't have to be a budget buster, but you need to figure out how to attract the right people to come in to give feedback on your product. You could also just do this on Craigslist and offer somebody, you know, a Starbucks card if they come in and give you feedback. But, you know, we just felt like having that little bit of a get-together gave some more excitement and we got some great feedback and increased awareness in a way that I didn't really think was possible before on such a tight budget. So that was a lot of fun as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. So there's always a solution. You just have to get out there and figure out how to find your people, how to find your tribe.
So stepping back a bit in talking about problems, and you're talking about the problem of getting users for your mobile app, but how do you know if the problem you're trying to solve is big enough in determining what your app or product or software or service should be about?
Right. Yes, no, that's a great question. I think that you have to do the market research to really find out how many people are having that problem and how many people are spending money solving that problem. And in the case of school fundraising, I mean, there are a lot of great statistics out there. If your product is something a little bit more novel, it might be a little bit more difficult, but you know, for example, we can search and find that there are 75 million parents out there, and school budgets have been decreased by X percent across the country in the last few years. We can find out that selling fundraising products is an X billion dollar industry. And we can see, okay, well, what we're doing is a good antidote to that. And if we even got, you know, 1%, 10% of that market, we would be in good shape. We would have a very valuable company, and it's worth doing. Now, it's not as easy, I guess, for some other things, but, I mean, if you're doing the next big email widget, I'm sure you could find stats about your about email as well. But I would still, at that state of concepting, I would still write up your concept and try to get it in front of people. Try to get feedback. Okay, based on what I've described and maybe sketched out for you, are you interested in this product or not? Would you sign up for this? And if you aren't doing that kind of thing, you could go very, very deep into the development before you find out that nobody cares about what you're doing, or they can't understand how you're describing it. And I think, you know, I say this from experience, because when we did the original Ed Rover, we were doing it as a check-in process. So in essence, it operated like Foursquare for school fundraising. If you checked into a participating merchant, you would get a donation for your school. Now, we had a lot of challenges with that. First, we had to sign up nearly every merchant in America, which is a big challenge. Then we had to sign up every consumer in America, and we needed to get their schools rallied around it. Plus, we needed to educate people about what a check-in was. Foursquare was not as popular, and Facebook hadn't introduced their check-in yet. And so we had a huge challenge in front of us. Most people, when we would go out and talk to them, were like, what do I have to do? How does this work? And it took a lot more explaining than necessary. Now when we've done our new pivot, which is more about shopping than checking in, although we'll have a location component re-enter the product mix down the road. But now everybody understands that you can do online shopping on your mobile phone or on your tablet or on your PC. And so we've overcome a lot of those issues. Plus, we've been able to sign up merchant partners under standard affiliate agreements, and we don't have to work as hard at doing the business development with partners. Now we can just focus on acquiring the user and telling them that it's going to be much easier to do this kind of fundraising throughout the year. Just do all of your shopping on this one portal, and your school will benefit. So it's, you know, picking a business model that is too confusing will only make your life harder. Keep it as simple, simple, simple as possible, and try to eliminate all of the, you know, as many of the variables that will cause you to do work as possible, and everything will be more successful in the end.
It's a really important, people who don't have kids in public schools may not be aware of what the issue is, and it's really, really critical that funding for music, extracurricular, sports, arts, depending on where you live in the country, but certainly in California, those have all been impacted for many years. So I really appreciate what you're doing with Ed Rover to make fundraising easier for schools, because a couple years ago I got involved in politics to fight cell towers that they wanted to site on top of the schools. And that was quite eye-opening, and it was also quite a learning experience to apply my product management skills to politics, because people weren't looking deep, they weren't looking at consequences, they weren't looking at contracts, they were having an emotional reaction, and it was dividing the community. And we found a way to bring the community together, but really the bottom line of this story was the superintendent of the school district came to me and apologized and said, look, it was a way to raise money instead of doing fundraisers all the time, and they didn't know, they only looked at the income from the cell towers. They didn't look at all of the consequences. So
yeah. And it's so hard, you know, everybody is looking for something to take the pinch off. And it's interesting because 80% of Americans actually do buy from product fundraisers every year. And so whether you have a kid in public school or not, you most likely have a neighbor or a nephew or a niece, somebody's asking you, or, you know, outside of the supermarket asking you to buy, you know, popcorn or Girl Scout cookies. So the fundraising culture is really deep and everybody's participating in some way, but it's, you know, it's challenging to know what's going on. Now, recently in California, there was a bill passed that required all of the schools to remove the soda vending machines from their schools. And that was, there was a real eye-opener there because that was funding their athletic programs or their extracurricular activities.
Yep.
And so now suddenly the football teams have to do even more to fundraise. You know, it's just everything has a ripple effect, and they're really looking for creative solutions. So, you know, this is just a drop in the bucket so far, but I really have high hopes that we are trying to solve a problem that is large and that we've got a fun and clever creative solution happening. And, you know, we are really in the midst of our last sprint up to our new platform. And, you know, we do have a beta version of it up at edrover.com. So I would love it if any of your listeners have creative ideas for this, if they register and they let me know at Tanya, T-A-N-I-A, at edrover.com. If they have suggestions, we'd love it. We've got a lot of great plans, but, of course, you have some of the brightest people in America, and it sounds like the world, looking at hearing your podcast every week. So we would love your help and support and interest in making our product better. So thank you for listening to this whole thing and for helping us out.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Tanya. And I have identified the winners of the Cause the Power of Digital Storytelling for Social Good. And I will, it is Andre at Dell. And and Rosalina Sinise. So we'll tweet them the information for how they can access that when we go offline. So I did go to edrover.com, by the way, and I wasn't aware of how to actually access or download or use the app. So do we have to email you to get more information?
Oh, no. So if you go to edrover.com and you register and then you click under the little hamburger symbol, you'll be able to pick a school. So the website right now represents more of what the new platform will be. There is an app on the iTunes App Store and the Windows Phone Store that represents our old business model, but it will be retired as soon as we get our new app up. So I love the feedback on edrover.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Speaking of drop in the bucket, I feel like this wasn't enough time. We're already at the end of the hour. And
it was so fun.
And I really appreciate your coming on to kick off our Women in Product month of August at the Global Product Management Talk. We've been speaking with Tatiana Mowry, who wrote The Cause, The Power of Digital Storytelling for Social Good, which is available at The Cause Book. She's been speaking about her app at Ed Rover, at edrover.com. You can follow her at Mrs. Mowry. Thank you for joining us. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host for the Global Product Management Talk. Join us in person in San Francisco in August when on August 14th, I believe it is, at Atlassian Software in San Francisco, when Teresa Torres, who is the VP of Product at After College, is talking, another woman in product, talking about how to pivot from sales-driven to product-focused, come out and network, great food, great beer, great people in person. And she will also be speaking at the Startup Product Conference in October. Go to startupproduct.com and register today for the best price. Thank you so much, Tatiana. Look forward to continuing the conversation with you and utilizing and providing feedback to Ed Rover.
Thank you so much, Cindy. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners.
Great. And join us again next week. Follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, and you'll get reminders and information. You'll get pushed information about who the next speaker is. Also, you can listen on demand to this and over 100 other broadcasts. Get us on iTunes at PRODMGMTTALK. Shoot an email to info@startupproduct.com to get your product mentioned to sponsor upcoming events and to join the community. Thank you to our engineer, BZ Lewis, at studio132.com, and thank you to Blame Sally for the music. Have a great week, and we'll see you again next week, same time. Get out of that.